So imagine you wake up, right, and you find out your phone's AI has already booked a dinner reservation that you didn't even ask for.
Yeah, just completely in the background.
Exactly.
Cool.
And meanwhile, a top secret humanoid robot, which is basically built from washing machine parts, is like getting ready to enter your home.
Oh, and the entire internet thinks a major tech CEO died overnight just because of a Wikipedia prank.
It honestly sounds like a pitch for a chaotic sci-fi movie, doesn't it?
It really does. But I mean, that is literally just the news cycle from the last 24 hours.
The pace of all these developments is, well, it's just staggering. And they're happening across sectors that, used to operate completely independently of one another.
Right.
But now we're seeing hardware, software, global health, and even financial regulation all like crashing into the exact same choke point at the exact same time.
Which is wild. So, welcome to today's deep dive. It's Thursday, August 13th, 2026, and we are so thrilled you're joining us today.
We really have a fantastic stack to get through. We do. We've got our sources today from Tikkun Morning Thursday, and we're covering six distinct stories that literally just broke.
Fresh off the press.
Yep. So we're looking at Google's massive Pixel 11 launch, xAI dropping some huge new Grok updates, a historic $500 million donation from the Gates Foundation.
Which is just a massive number.
Totally. Plus a wild Wikipedia vandalism scandal, a major crypto regulatory filing from Fidelity, and this heavily guarded humanoid robot project that just leaked out of Samsung.
It's a lot to process.
It is. Okay, let's unpack this. Because on the surface, if you're just reading these headlines over your morning coffee, this feels like, I don't know, a totally random grab bag of tech and finance news.
It definitely reads like a random assortment, yeah. But if you look at the underlying mechanisms, we are witnessing a very specific pivotal moment in time.
How so?
Well, we're seeing the precise moment where digital artificial intelligence is violently colliding with the physical world.
Violently colliding. I like that.
Yeah, and this collision is creating massive new competitive moats based entirely on who owns proprietary real-world data. And, it's forcing a global regulatory reckoning that our current institutions are just, they're simply not equipped to handle.
Right. So let's start with that collision right in our pockets. Because Google just unveiled the Pixel 11 lineup in New York.
The new flagship.
Yeah. So we've got the standard Pixel 11 at 6.3 inches for $799. Then the Pro models at 6.4, 6.9 inches, starting at $999. And of course, the Pro Fold at $1,799.
Pretty standard pricing tier for them at this point.
Yeah, exactly. And the physical design is cool. They replaced that chinky metal camera bump with a new 40% slimmer glass camera bar, which saves like 15 grams of weight.
Right, which is nice for your wrist.
Definitely. Plus, they announced a $29 Pixel tag to compete with AirTags. But I mean, the physical hardware isn't really the real story here, is it? The leap is what's powering this thing from the inside out.
Exactly. The physical hardware is basically just a vessel for their new custom Tensor G6 AI chip.
G6.
Yeah. And this piece of silicon was purpose-built from the ground up for one very specific reason, which is the shift toward agentic AI.
Right, agentic, meaning it has agency.
Exactly. For the last few years, we've treated AI on our phones like a highly intelligent encyclopedia. You ask a question, it gives an answer.
Right, very transactional.
But agentic AI flips that dynamic completely. The AI is no longer a passive chatbot. It's an active participant capable of executing multi-step tasks across different apps without, asking for your permission at every single step.
Which they showed off in the demo.
Yeah.
It was crazy. They showcased the Gemini assistant automatically reading a text thread about dinner, checking the user's calendar, and then actively booking a restaurant reservation through a third-party app.
All entirely in the background.
Right. And the phone is also doing live voice translation in 72 languages. But the really fascinating part of that translation demo was the speed. They got the latency down to under 100 milliseconds.
Yes. And that specific number, 100 milliseconds, that is actually the magic threshold in human psychology.
Really? Why that exact number?
Well, when a delay is longer than that, your brain registers it as a machine processing a task. It feels like you're using a tool, like waiting for a website to load.
Oh, like that slight lag where you know you're talking to a computer.
Exactly.
Well.
But when the latency drops below that 100 millisecond mark, the human brain perceives the interaction as instantaneous. It stops feeling like you're using a translation app and creates this illusion that you just simply understand another language in real time.
That is wild.
It is. But to pull that off locally on a mobile device requires an immense amount of localized memory. which is why they also announced the Pixel Watch 5 has double the RAM now, up to 4 gigabytes, just to handle the data overflow. And they added Circle to Search 2.0 for 3D objects.
Right. But, I mean, I look at this agentic capability, and it feels a bit like, I don't know, giving a hyper-competent personal assistant your credit card,
yeah,
dropping them in the middle of a busy city, and just crossing your fingers they don't buy the wrong thing.
That's a very real concern.
Right. Like, having my phone book dinner is incredibly convenient until it misinterprets a sarcastic text message and double books me for a tasting menu that charges, like, a massive non-refundable cancellation fee.
And that is the inherent risk of granting autonomy to a system that doesn't actually understand human nuance. I mean, it knows how to execute the code perfectly.
Right.
But it doesn't understand the social cost of making a mistake.
Exactly. Which brings us to another company that is trying to teach AI how the real world actually works. xAI just released Grok 4.6.
A huge update for developers.
Yeah, massive. The headline there is that they slashed API prices drastically. So they're now charging $2 for input and $6 for output per million tokens, making it 60% cheaper than competitors like Claude 3.5 Sonnet and GPT-4o.
The price war is officially on.
For real. But for anyone who hasn't built a language model recently, what exactly is a token in this context?
Sure. Think of a token as the basic building block of language for an AI. It isn't necessarily a whole word.
Okay.
A token is typically a chunk of characters. So a short, common word like cat is one token, but a complex word might be broken into two or three tokens.
Forgot it.
So when we talk about processing a million tokens, we're talking about the AI reading or generating roughly 750,000 words.
Which is, wait, how much text is that?
It's equivalent to reading the entire Harry Potter series.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And slashing the price to process that much data indicates that the basic algorithm for text generation has become entirely commoditized.
So basically, if generating text is cheap and easy, the real value has to be somewhere else entirely.
Precisely.
Which explains the next part of this story. Because Elon Musk told SpaceX employees that they are the, quote, parents of this artificial intelligence. Because the upcoming Grok 4.7 model, coming in like 3 to 4 weeks, is being trained on all of SpaceX's internal data.
Every single piece of it?
Yeah. Every CAD design, every thruster test, every catastrophic failure on the launch pad. And Morgan Stanley is looking at this and predicting xAI revenue will surpass Starlink by 2028.
Which is a staggering prediction.
Right. But here's my question. Is training Grok on literal rocket science actually going to make it a better AI for everyday users? Or are we just building an incredibly niche genius that can, like, perfectly calculate orbital mechanics,
yeah,
but can't even hold a normal conversation?
What's fascinating here is that everyday conversation is no longer the goal.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The industry is moving entirely out of the demo phase where writing a catchy poem was enough to secure funding. The true competitive moat moving forward isn't the algorithm itself. It is domain-specific proprietary data.
The actual real-world information.
Exactly. When Grok trains on SpaceX data, it is absorbing real-world physics, complex systems engineering, material sciences, and emergency problem-solving.
It's learning how the physical world actually operates.
Yes. Because large language models trained solely on internet text eventually hallucinate. Because they don't understand physical constraints. They don't know that two objects can't occupy the same space.
Right, they're just guessing the next word.
Exactly. An AI that understands the stress tolerances of titanium under extreme heat has a grounding in reality that an AI trained on, you know, Reddit forums simply doesn't possess.
That makes total sense. And so if these AI models are mastering real-world physics through rocket data, the inevitable next step is taking that brain out of the cloud and giving it a physical body to actually navigate our environment.
The hardware step.
Yeah, which perfectly transitions into this massive leak out of Samsung. So they had this top secret humanoid robot project operating under a brand new division called RX, short for Robotics Experience.
And this is a massive shift in their corporate strategy.
Right, because it's completely separate from Rainbow Robotics, right?
Yeah, totally separate. The RX division reports directly to the CEO, completely bypassing their existing investments. And they are pouring $13 billion into a facility in Gumi, South Korea, pushing for commercial production by 2026.
Which is basically right now. And the leaked physical specs are incredible. The robot is about the size of an average adult. So 170 centimeters tall, weighing 60 kilograms.
Very human proportions.
Yeah. And it features 32 degrees of freedom an 8-hour hot swappable battery, similar to what you'd find in an electric vehicle, and the hands use tactile sensors ripped straight from their smartphone touchscreen lines for precise force feedback.
Let's break down that 32 degrees of freedom metric for a second, because it dictates how this machine will actually interact with human environment.
Okay, yeah. What does that actually mean?
A degree of freedom is basically an independent direction in which a joint can move. Your human arm, from the shoulder to the wrist, has about 7 degrees of freedom.
Oh.
So by engineering 32 degrees across the entire robotic body, Samsung is ensuring it can fluidly mimic human biomechanics. It can crouch, reach around corners, manipulate objects without that stiff, robotic, jerking motion we're used to seeing in factories.
Right. It looks natural.
Yeah.
But out of all the futuristic specs, the detail that totally blew my mind was the motors.
The appliance connection.
Yes. The actuators powering this cutting-edge humanoid aren't custom-designed robotics hardware. They are adapted directly from Samsung's home appliance division.
This is brilliant.
We are talking about washing machine and refrigerator motors driving a futuristic robotic butler.
It sounds like, I don't know, building a sci-fi spaceship out of minivan parts.
It does, but that appliance motor adaptation is a masterclass in engineering pragmatism.
Yeah.
Think about the operational requirements of a washing machine motor.
Mm-hmm. It has to spin a heavy, unbalanced load of wet clothes for hours at a time. It has to be incredibly reliable. It has to operate quietly so it doesn't disturb the household. And most importantly, it has to manage heat efficiently in an enclosed space so it doesn't cause a fire.
Oh, and those are the exact same parameters you need for a robot operating in a human living room.
Precisely. Minivan parts might not be glamorous, but they are cheap, mass-produced, and proven to work under stress for a decade.
That is so smart. And because of that, Samsung is aiming for a price point of $40,000 to $50,000 to undercut Tesla's Optimus program.
A very aggressive price target.
Very. But they're also floating this robotics-as-a-service subscription model, charging consumers $500 to $800 a month to basically rent the robot.
The Reyes model.
Yeah, but come on, are everyday people really going to pay $800 a month for this? Or is this subscription model just a way for Samsung to force a massive paid beta test on the public before the tech is actually fully baked?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, the subscription model solves the most critical flaw in hardware development, which is obsolescence.
How so?
Well, if you buy a $50,000 robot today, its internal processors will be hopelessly outdated in 2 years. But a subscription allows Samsung to retain ownership, continuously push software updates, and physically swap out degrading parts like batteries or, you know, worn-out washing machine motors.
Oh, so you're always getting the upgraded version.
Exactly. This represents the beginning of the hardware renaissance. For the last decade, we kind of assumed software would eat the world and everything would live in the cloud. But the physical world is asserting its importance again.
Right.
The winner of this humanoid race won't necessarily be the company with the smartest AI, like Boston Dynamics or Tesla. The winner will be the company that builds the most reliable, easily manufacturable physical platform. Just like Apple did with the smartphone, whoever establishes the dominant robotic hardware first will control the entire third-party app store for physical chores for the next 50 years.
Wow. Okay, so we have AI acting autonomously on our phones. And we have physical robots preparing to walk through our kitchens. But if you want to really understand the physical world, the single most complex, unpredictable physical system on Earth is the human body.
Without a doubt.
And to map that system, you need an unprecedented amount of data. Which brings us to the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. They just committed a staggering $540.2 million to the University of Washington's Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation, the IHME.
This represents the largest single donation in the university's entire 163-year history.
$500 million.
Yeah. And the objective matches the scale of the funding. They're launching a 10-year evolution of the Global Burden of Disease Study. Currently, health data is tracked at a national level across 204 countries. But the new plan uses AI-enabled tools to shatter that data down into thousands of hyperlocal regions.
Right. And Dr. Christopher Murray, the director of the Institute, explained that AI can identify causal patterns that are completely invisible to human analysts.
The scale of the data is just too massive for a human to process.
Exactly. It feels like they're trying to build the ultimate Google Maps for human disease, like a predictive system that can see a health traffic jam forming on a specific city block before anyone even shows a single symptom.
And predictive modeling at a hyper-local scale fundamentally changes how humanity approaches public health. When you analyze data at a national level, you are always reacting.
Right, waiting for the numbers to go up.
Yeah. A virus spreads, you count the cases, you deploy the medicine. But by utilizing AI to analyze hyper-local environmental factors, economic conditions, and granular medical histories, the system can predict the exact social dominoes that will fall to cause an outbreak months in advance.
So you can actually stop it before it starts.
Exactly, allowing for targeted resource allocation before the crisis even begins.
But there's a catch here. The foundation was very clear that all of this hyper-local health data will be freely and openly available to researchers and governments worldwide.
Open source.
Yeah. But if this massive AI model is mapping the exact weaknesses of every local health system on the planet and making it public, aren't we just handing bad actors an open source instruction manual?
That's a very valid fear.
Right. Like if someone wanted to launch a biological attack or disrupt a specific region, they could just query the database to find the exact neighborhood where the medical infrastructure is most vulnerable.
Yeah. That tension is known as the open data paradox. By democratizing information to help everyone, you inherently lower the barrier to entry for malicious use.
It's a scary trade-off.
It is. But this project also exposes the reality of the AI era we are currently navigating. Compounding data density is the ultimate advantage. While the Gates Foundation is keeping this specific database open to level the playing field, the underlying mechanics mirror exactly what the private sector is doing.
How do you mean?
Well, just as Google uses the global Android ecosystem to gather context for its Gemini AI, and xAI uses SpaceX engineering logs to teach Grok physics, the IHME is using hyperlocal human health data to teach AI about biology.
Ah, I see.
An artificial intelligence is only as intelligent as the physical data feeding it.
Okay, so we've established that AI systems are gaining immense capabilities by consuming these vast data sets. They're managing our schedules, they're living in robotic bodies, they're predicting global health trends.
They're everywhere.
They really are. But what happens when these incredibly powerful automated systems blindly trust bad data? Because how are our traditional regulatory systems supposed to keep up when the technology itself just gets confused?
And that's exactly what we're starting to see happen.
Right, because based on the news today, the systems are failing in some really spectacular ways.
The speed of automated deployment has completely lapped the speed of human oversight. We build these systems for scale, assuming the input data will always remain pristine.
Which is a huge assumption. Right. So let's look at a prime example of that failing. On the morning of August 12, Google's automated knowledge panel, you know, that prominent information box that pops up at the top of your screen when you search for a person?
Right, the summary box.
Yeah. Well, it mistakenly declared that OpenAI CEO Sam Altman was dead.
Which obviously he wasn't.
He was very much alive, and Anthropic's CEO, Dario Amodei, was targeted with the exact same false death date.
A coordinated thing.
Totally. It turns out Sam Altman's Wikipedia page had been hit with 22 malicious edits in a single day by internet trolls. Usually, his page receives maybe 5 edits an entire month.
Wow.
Wikipedia administrators eventually caught it and locked the pages down, but the damage was already done. Google had scraped it.
This is a textbook case of automation bias. Google's system is designed to provide instant answers, and it relies heavily on Wikipedia because it's generally a high-trust, heavily moderated environment.
Right.
The algorithm didn't verify the death of a major public figure by cross-referencing news outlets. It just blindly scraped the latest Wikipedia edit and presented it to millions of users as absolute verified fact. The machine trusts the source code it was pointed at, totally devoid of any contextual awareness.
Here's where it gets really interesting. You have Google's multi-billion-dollar automated search system acting like a genius college professor who blindly believes everything written on a bathroom stall.
That's a great way to put it.
Right. And while that is happening in the information sector, the financial sector is facing its own automation crisis.
The Fidelity situation.
Exactly. Fidelity Investments just filed a request with the SEC to fundamentally change how they operate their Ethereum ETF, known as the Fifth Fund, which currently holds $898 million in assets.
A massive fund.
Huge.
Yeah.
They want permission to take up to 100% of that Ethereum and stake it on the network. Now, for the uninitiated, can you explain what staking actually means and why an ETF wants to do it?
Sure. So in the traditional stock market, you buy a share of a company and it just sits in your account.
Doing nothing.
Right. But cryptocurrency networks like Ethereum operate differently. They require participants to lock up or stake their crypto to help validate transactions and secure the network. In exchange for providing the security service, the network pays you a yield, essentially like earning interest on a savings account. Currently, network staking yields about 3.5% annually, and 34% of all Ethereum in existence is currently staked.
That's very common.
Very. Fidelity is proposing to stake the ETF's holdings, give 85% of those rewards back to the fund's shareholders as quarterly cash payouts, and keep the remaining 15% as a fee for the staking providers.
Okay, earning an extra 3.5% sounds great on paper. But there are massive, complex risks involved here, specifically something called slashing.
Yes, the downside.
Yeah. How does slashing impact a regular retail investor who just thought they were, buying a standard ETF through their brokerage account?
Slashing is the network's built-in automated punishment system. If the computer server validating transactions goes offline, experiences a software glitch, or attempts to process a fraudulent transaction, the decentralized network automatically penalizes the validator.
Meaning they lose money.
Literally, it slashes their holdings, permanently deleting a portion of the staked Ethereum.
That's insane. It's like a traditional bank asking to take the gold bars sitting securely in your vault and use them to run a high-risk side business where the gold could just magically vaporize if a server goes down.
That is exactly what is happening.
So are we asking regulators to do the impossible here? We're demanding the SEC figure out highly complex cryptographic slashing risks for everyday retail investors, while over at Google, billions of dollars of engineering can't even figure out if a prominent tech CEO is still breathing.
This raises an important question regarding the core tension of our current technological landscape. It's the severe friction between automated scale and human judgment. These systems are designed to process millions of actions per second. It's a scale humans cannot possibly comprehend. But they entirely lack the basic common sense a human child possesses. A human editor sees Sam Altman died today and spends 5 seconds checking a news website before publishing it.
But the automated system just pushes it to the front page of the internet instantly.
And that lack of judgment scales dangerously. Imagine if that Wikipedia vandalism happened to the CEO of a publicly traded company right before an earnings call. Automated high-frequency trading bots would instantly scrape Google's false knowledge panel, and the stock market could experience a massive flash crash in microseconds based entirely on a prank.
That is terrifying.
And on the crypto ETF side, if the SEC approves staking and a validator experiences a technical glitch, retail investors in a highly regulated Fidelity fund will suddenly lose actual net asset value.
Real money.
Yes. They lose their retirement money not because the broader financial market moved, but because a decentralized piece of code executed an automated penalty that no human can reverse.
So the technology industry, whether we're talking about AI search results, autonomous robotics, or decentralized crypto finance, is running significantly faster than the guardrails can be built.
Significantly faster. The primary risk isn't just that the technology will occasionally fail. The risk is that a catastrophic failure will trigger harsh reactionary regulations from institutions that don't fully understand the tech, stifling the entire industry. If these companies don't intentionally build robust human fail-safes into these autonomous loops, the regulators will eventually do it for them, and they will do it with a very heavy hand.
Which nobody wants. Well, we have covered a massive amount of ground today.
I really have.
We started with Google's Pixel 11 and its new agentic AI that's actively managing our schedules using custom silicon. We examined how xAI's Grok is learning complex real-world physics by consuming SpaceX data. We explored Samsung's push to build humanoid robots powered by highly reliable, mass-produced washing machine motors. We looked at how the Gates Foundation is building the ultimate data moat to predict global health trends at a hyper-local level.
All massive shifts.
And finally, we confronted the very real, immediate vulnerabilities of automation, from Google declaring someone dead based on internet trolls to the SEC trying to unravel the automated slashing risks of Ethereum staking in traditional ETFs.
When you lay it all out sequentially like that, the patterns become impossible to ignore. Software is no longer content to just stay in the cloud. It is aggressively seeking a physical form, and the physical world is demanding better software to manage its complexity.
And that is exactly what we want you, our listener, to take away from this deep dive. The pace of change is accelerating, and the sheer volume of news can feel completely overwhelming sometimes.
It absolutely can.
But the shortcut to being well-informed isn't trying to memorize every single new phone spec, API pricing update, or regulatory filing. The secret is understanding the underlying convergence. The physical world and the digital world are no longer distinct environments.
No, they're merging.
Right. They are merging into singular co-designed systems where software dictates hardware and physical data trains the software.
And as those two domains merge, the ultimate currency for the next decade won't just be processing power. The most valuable asset a company or a government can possess will be verifiable trust, human oversight, and absolute data reliability.
So true. So as you go about your day, I want to leave you with one final thought to ponder that builds on everything we've just discussed.
Okay, what is it?
Well, if AI models like Grok are mastering the constraints of real-world physics, and our phones are making autonomous agentic decisions to book our reservations, and Samsung's robots are getting ready to physically navigate the unpredictable layout of our homes.
Right.
What does everyday life look like in exactly 5 years? What happens when your phone's personal AI has to independently negotiate a complex booking conflict with a restaurant's scheduling AI?
Oh, wow.
Or when your physical home robot has to negotiate the handoff of a package with an autonomous delivery drone on your front porch? What happens to our society and our economy when these automated, highly capable systems start communicating and negotiating exclusively with each other, leaving human input entirely out of the loop?
That is the exact moment the paradigm shift will be complete, and we transition from being the operators of technology to simply being the beneficiaries or the casualties of it.
Such a powerful way to frame it. Well, thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive into the absolute bleeding edge of the news.
Yeah.
Stay curious, keep looking for those hidden patterns, and we will catch you next time.